The Ticket.
Michigan Insider Podcast is brought to you in part by defense attorney and WTKA legal insider Joe Simon. Find Joe at themichigandefenders.com.
And we are back, folks, here on the Michigan Insider. Sports Talk 1050 WTKA online at WTKA.com. Sam Webb, Mr. Ira Weintraub with me on location live out here. Beautiful Roderick Farm, site of the U of M Club of Greater Detroit's annual golf outing. Matt the Ms. Misler on the ones and twos back in studio. We have Skip on air out here with me as well. As I am back from my hiatus, much needed brain break. And you talk about being rejuvenated, getting the juices flowing, getting ready for the season. Man, it did me some good to be out and to be focused on a different kind of work, the kind of work your wife puts you to, right? And so that's behind me, and now I'm back raring to go. My one regret about going off on the break is, man, I missed my window for participating in the mayor of Michigan Twitter's annual survey. My apologies to Scott Bell. Scott, I'm sure you didn't miss me anyway, but glad you could be with us. Maybe you could put me through the paces of your survey right here on air. How you doing today?
Here we go. I've got my clipboard, got my pen, and I'm ready to quiz you right here. So totally understand. Still had lots of participation, and you had a well-deserved break, and I'm glad you got to get a little rejuvenated before what I'm sure will be a grind this fall.
Yeah, so Scott, and first of all, you can find Scott on Twitter at SBell021. Well-earned title of the mayor of Michigan Twitter. If you follow him on Twitter, you'll see what I mean by that. But as you sort of put the media throng through the survey paces, kind of give me your big takeaways about what the expectations are, at least at the media level, what their expectations are for Michigan this season.
Yeah, it's 20 total people that cover Michigan were a part of it. So it's a pretty decent sample in terms of that are kind of around the team or covering them on a day-to-day basis, and pretty split on 11-1 or 10-2. Pretty strong consensus across the that this is a second place. And George saw this being a team that's going to end up in the Rose Bowl, with about 70% of them predicting a win. So not a CFP. So technically a minor step down last year, given where this program's been the last couple of decades, haven't met doors close. Most people had the opportunity to sign up for a Rose Bowl win before the season. I think a lot of people would take it. So it skews pretty positive in terms of the overall trend line on where people are thinking.
All right, so what were the questions? Again, what were the survey questions that you put to the people?
So we
just
had
give me the first
predicted
one.
First record, or first is the overall record.
First is the overall record, including the potential bowl game or playoff run, right?
12 game record.
Oh, so 12-game record. Yeah, I definitely am of the 11-1 variety. All right, what's the next one?
Finishing the Big Ten.
Finishing the Big Ten, number two.
Bowl destination. Don't have this in front of me, so I might not be going right down the line.
Yeah, Rose Bowl, right there with you on that.
Bowl result.
Oh, win.
Result versus Ohio State and result versus Michigan State.
So, you know, in Columbus, again, right now, and I'm prefacing this for all of the flack that I know I'll get from some people, but right now I have that as an L. Let's see how the season unfolds. I reserve the right to change it as the year, my perspective can change as the year goes on. But picking today, I would count that as my one loss on the season. At Ohio State, but beating Michigan State, of course.
Might be skipping a couple, but then we also get to superlatives like leading passer, leading rusher, leading receiver, leading sacks, and leading interceptions.
Ooh, so leading passer, I think J.J. McCarthy. I think J.J. McCarthy is going to be the starting quarterback by the midway point of the season. That is my personal opinion on the matter. I think he will win the job and become the top passer. Leading rusher, I'll go with Blake Corum. Leading receiver, I'm going to go with Ronnie Bell. Leading sacker is probably the toughest. I'm going to go, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to go probably a little off board, but I think Michigan is going to be a blitz happy team, and I'm going to lead in sacker as Junior Colson this year. Leading interceptor, I'm going to go with R.J. Moten, quarterback of the secondary, playing the safety position, more conducive to picking off passes. So I'll go with R.J. Moten there.
Okay, yeah. So on the J.J. front, J.J. Cade, that was split, I think, 5-15. So 25% had J.J. as the leading passer. I was one of those five. And then the majority, 15, which is 75% of them, went with Cade. So wasn't a slam dunk on the Cade front. You weren't on an island with J.J., but the majority did skew Cade.
Yeah, I think the Cade pick is the safe pick. I think he will absolutely be the starting quarterback. I think he will absolutely be at least as good as he was last year. But here's the question, and we've talked about this before, Scott. I mean, this is the tough call. This is why you get paid, what is it, $7 million, $8 million, whatever Jim's getting paid. This is the kind of decision that you're paid to make. You got a starting quarterback that is not going to lose. It's not like he's going to go out and, you know, flub it all up. It's not like he rested on his laurels in the offseason. I think he's going to build upon last year. But the question is, will he build enough upon last year for you to beat Ohio State or to have the best chance to beat Ohio State and to maybe win a playoff game? That is the measure that, you know, back, was it 4 or 5 years ago, that Dabo put when it was Kelly Bryant and Trevor Lawrence. And he ultimately went with Trevor Lawrence when Kelly Bryant did nothing to lose that job. Scott, I keep going back to it. He had taken his team to the playoff, right? He had won the ACC championship. He had played well over the course of four games. And yet Dabo Sweeney decided after four games that, hey, you know, the young quarterback gives me the best chance to get over the championship hump. I think the same determination will be made with J.J. McCarthy this season.
Yeah, I think that's the best sort of recent comparison with that. Kelly Bryant going 4-0 to start that year, but Lawrence's upside just being too much to ignore. So, again, that's kind of a lot of those same reasons are why I went with J.J. on that same question, too. And also, Cade starting to start the season, I think a lot of people expect that. That first month of the season, those games are going to be such blowouts that you're going to see J.J. getting a fair amount of time anyways. So statistically, I see them actually being pretty close, even with Cade starting. I look at what happened with Hassan Haskins and Blake Corum last year. With Corum was sort of coming in, and he was getting the majority of the rushing yards. He was their leading rusher for four out of the first five games. So that starting role, and I know quarterback is much different than these other positions, but that doesn't necessarily mean, hey, you're the person that's going to be throwing for 350 yards and then someone's going to come and mop up in the fourth quarter. I see J.J. getting snaps in second quarter, maybe the first quarter, and in a decent amount of the second half as well.
What are your thoughts on scheduling? We got into a debate this morning, Scott, about you know, whether fans are you know, so disenchanted with the way that this schedule lines up that, you know, they would rather it be, even if it meant, you know, a greater chance for a loss, that they would rather it be a high-level Power 5 opponent than having the kind of schedule that they have this year that probably, with the way this team is comprised, gives them a better chance to compete for a championship. Where do you fall in that argument? Do you think you should have a high-level Power 5 opponent every single year?
I absolutely love this schedule, and I think the fact that we are at a point where people are complaining about it being too boring is a great sign of where this program is now compared to where it was a decade ago or even 7-8 years ago. Or really, I mean, think about the 2-4 season. first and foremost, you need to be prioritizing putting your team in position to be successful. So I love the Colorado States, the Hawaiis of the world. I know September won't be the most exciting ticket for people to buy, the most exciting game to watch on TV, but it is exactly what this team needs to prepare itself and put itself in position for another CFP run. You have a lot of young players that are going to be stepping into new important roles, and what better way to sort of get your legs under you, get some experience than playing against teams where you can afford to try some things out. And that extends to the coordinators too. You got a lot of people that are going to be calling games for the first time. And I would much rather start the season with this schedule than looking at Jim Harbaugh's first year starting a game on the road against Utah. Like that's setting yourself up in a lose-lose situation. And while you might lose points in the excitement department in September of this year, you're not going to lose it in the win-loss column, and that's where it matters the most.
Yeah, you know, it's also going to be really interesting to see in those first four games who among the sort of breakout candidates kind of emerges, right? I mean, so we know Blake Corum's going to be really, really good. I wouldn't classify Donovan Edwards, even though he sort of picked up steam as the year went on. If he explodes this year like I expect him to, he's not a breakout guy for me. We know about him. Using that sort of standard, who would you see? Like, who are you anticipating maybe being a breakout performer among the guys that maybe you aren't looking to and say, hey, I know Donovan Edwards is going to be big time. I know Ronnie Bell is going to have an outstanding season. Who are that next tier guys that is looking to ascend do you expect to be that breakout player on offense and defense?
Yeah, I was going to say, on offense, it's really tough because you have established players at every level. Like the backfield, you have Blake and Donovan, and they're there. I am interested to see what sort of happens in that third down or more aptly short yardage back, what happens there. But receivers, you have all the leading receivers from last year, plus Ronnie Bell returning. Tight ends, you have Allen Schoonmaker, who are going to eat up the majority of those snaps. So loved what I saw from Darius Clemens in the spring game.
Yeah.
I wonder how much time a true freshman wide receiver is going to get, but he looked like a player that's going to basically take that situation into his own hands and force his way onto the field in some capacity. And defense, Will Johnson's obviously the obvious answer with the hype surrounding him. But I think who steps up at the defensive end spot, those edge rushing spots, will be interesting to see too. I don't think you can really call Jalen Harrell a breakout candidate because he actually played a lot of key snaps sort of in run situations in relief for David Ojabo last year. But I think he's someone that doesn't get talked about enough. And Mike Morris was my answer for the leading sack guy. And again, he isn't necessarily super under the radar, but he's someone I expect to be talking about a lot this fall as well.
Yeah, Jalen Harrell started that. He started the Big Ten championship game, so I'm with you on that. He's kind of a guy that we've seen a lot of. I mean, for me, I just feel like Andre Anthony. We saw flashes, but not enough to where I look at him as a certainty like Donovan Edwards. Donovan Edwards is absolutely going to have a monster season. I'm convinced. And a monster in whatever number of snaps he gets. Andre Anthony, I think, is a little more of a gamble because there's so many. You just mentioned Darius Clemens. There's so many receivers that are capable of having big games that it's hard to pick out one. But, you know, Andrell, looking back at that Michigan State game, Scott, I watched him in high school. And as much as I watched him in high school, I did not know he had that gear. I don't think anyone knew that he had that gear outside of maybe Andrell himself. You talk to some of the guys here in the offseason, and that's the guy that the majority of them pointed to as far as the, you know, the breakout kind of offensive guy is to them. And that kind of has me looking at Andrell as maybe the guy who steps up and has that an explosive season, maybe beyond what a lot of people are expecting.
Yeah, and you mentioned that Michigan State game, and I think a lot of people were surprised, like, after that game, there wasn't sort of that next step or even sort of a continuation
right.
of that. And I think it's tough to expect a true freshman to come in and sort of have those extended impacts. But he did so well against Michigan State. He, obviously, the super long touchdown to open things up, but the second touchdown catch on that pass from J.J. McCarthy was probably more impressive, not necessarily in the yardage, but just the skill and the ball skills it took to make a catch like that. So he did not look like a true freshman in that game. And I think some people were a little surprised that a lot of momentum from that game didn't necessarily carry out into other spots. So I think an extra year with that playbook, an extra year to physically mature, I think he's a great candidate to make some huge plays this fall. And if Ronnie Bell wasn't back, I could see him being sort of my choice in that most receiving yards pick, because he's got all the tools for sure.
We're talking to Scott Bell, the mayor of Michigan, Twitter here on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WTKA, online at WTK.com. So not concerned, Scott. This is not a concern question, but I wonder how seamless do you think the transition will be into two first-time play callers? This is the place where I think the first four games being what they are, where I really, really think it benefits the offense the most. Not with the quarterback competition or, you know, guys ascending to new roles or anything. I think it's mostly about the play callers and the collaborative play calling effort sliding back into that. I wonder how seamless you think that transition is going to be.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to be a super seamless transition, and I think that's fine. I don't think it needs to be. And honestly, I think we're going to actually just go ahead and put me on the record right here, August 15 or whatever the date is. We're going to see a lot of complaints about play calling after the first couple of weeks from fans, but that's because I think Michigan's going to keep things pretty close to the vest, because there isn't really a reason to super open it up. So the first few weeks, I think, is most important from a logistics and a system standpoint, just on, hey, how are these guys going to do it? Some people are used to being in the booth and they'll be on the field. Some people are used to being on the field, they'll be in the booth. And sort of getting that flow, the workflow kind of put together by the time, hey, we're going to Kinnick, we're playing at Iowa, we need to have this down. So I'm not expecting a bunch of exotic bells and whistles in weeks one and two. Honestly, I'm hopeful that that's not the case, because I want them to keep a lot of stuff close to the vest for when it matters. But it's going to be important for these first-time play callers to get a rhythm, sort of establish their own personal flow, and I think this is the schedule that lends itself for that to happen.
All right, Scott, let's switch gears a little bit and talk media rights deals and the news last week while I was out that the long-running, long-standing relationship between the Big Ten and ESPN is set to come to an end as ESPN balked at the Big Ten's offer. What do you make? How significant is that? What do you make of that development?
It is what it is. I think there's going to be some viewing habits that are going to be a little difficult for some people to change. I expect Michigan to be on a college game day site less frequently, because I think ESPN is going to skew more for quote unquote their games. But if that means watching a Charles Woodson preview show rather than a Kirk Herbstreit one, I think that's something I could get used to. But it's just going to be a little different. I think from the Big Ten standpoint, they did what they need to do. They need to take the highest bid and sort of advocate for their schools the most and see what's going to bring in the most money. And in this turnaround, it wasn't ESPN, and that's kind of where they're at.
Yeah, I mean, I noticed a lot of seeming shock, apparent shock to that. But I guess it was mostly because of the routine. I don't really seeing it have an adverse effect. I mean, other than what you said, and I guess I really hadn't thought about it, because how often is Michigan on game day anyway, right? I mean, if that's all you lose as a result of this deal.
The talk is that the adverse reaction is the secondary stuff. It's the just the byproduct. Like, you walk into a sports bar in the middle of the day, and ESPN's on, but your network is not. And you lose, just there's less coverage of your team and less viewership. But what we discussed last week, Sam, and you tell me, I don't know about you guys, but if Michigan and Ohio State are 11-0, I think they're going to talk about it plenty.
I'm right there with, and that's kind of my reaction to it. I actually think the Big Ten is right. Like, wherever we are, people are going to, especially in this footprint. Now, if you're talking about outside of the footprint, then say you're down in Florida, is ESPN more likely to be on than say Fox? Probably so. But here, I mean, they're going to, everywhere in the footprint, the channel habits are just going to shift. I don't care what sports bar you go to. At least that's my take, Scott.
Yeah, the cream's going to rise to the top. Like, what the big games are going to be the big games. I live down in Texas, and I go into a sports bar, and the Big Ten Network is going to be on because, it's been there long enough. We're not talking about Big Ten games being relegated to C-SPAN 2 or something like that. Like, it's still going to be primary channels. I mean, if it's a game, people are going to watch it, and we're talking about Fox and things like that. So I think it's, like you said, it's a routine thing more than anything else. And viewing habits will change, and 3 weeks into the season, people won't even, it probably won't even register as a blip on the radar once this change happens.
Yeah. Looking forward to 19 days from now when toe meets leather. Right here. And then we're also anxiously anticipating some other games. And so this is a kind of tangential, but it's not. I mean, it involves Ohio State. But the more we look at these recruiting rankings, the more we talk about how Notre Dame has done, the more I find myself not rooting for Ohio State. Scott wouldn't go so far as to say that, but am I off base in saying that is actually beneficial for Ohio State to win that game? Is it a stretch to say that at this point, the matchup between Ohio State and Notre Dame?
Sam, it's not rooting for Ohio State. It's rooting against Notre Dame. And once you embrace that, it feels a lot less dirty. But I agree. I think Ohio State blowing Notre Dame out of the water, that opening game, does Michigan more good than the opposite would. And I think needing that sort of negative attention around around Notre Dame would be helpful for Michigan. And I'm not one of those people that goes and quote unquote roots for the Big Ten to do well, but it will help the conference if Ohio State is established as this big dog early in the season, because part of what made Michigan's win over Ohio State last November such a big deal was Ohio State was trotting in as the number two team in the country and having been trumpeted as this unbeatable force basically all season long.
Right. Hey, Scott, it is definitely going to be a measure, because they're riding a lot of momentum from having excellent recruiters, a lot of excitement about Marcus Freeman, but there's a standing question about, can they coach? So if Ohio State could go out there and beat the brakes off of them, gives you some ammunition, some much needed ammunition against them in recruiting, because they've scored at a pretty good rate against Michigan so far in this recruiting cycle. Switching gears over to Michigan basketball, overseas trip upon us. What do you expect for the program to get out of this? And we haven't gotten into this question yet, but what are your expectations for Michigan basketball next season?
For the trip in general, I think it's mostly a team bonding thing. Get new pieces to get comfortable with the other pieces, and I love these type of trips. They were happened a fair amount of time in the Beeline era, and I think those seasons usually led to positive things. So I think the earlier you can kick these things off and get in these team building exercises. I mean, you look at what the football team just did with their long trips. I think those types of things are beneficial. So sign me up for these types of things as often as they're allowed. In terms of outlook for the season, I think Michigan's going to have the pieces to be contending. I expect them from a preseason sort of ranking standpoint to have most people pick them to finish third or so. And I think that's a fair spot for now. I think they have the ceiling to win the Big Ten. When you have a player like Hunter Dickinson, it's hard not to think they have a chance to make a run, but I think a lot is going to depend on how some of these new pieces fit, how a Jalen Llewellyn does at the point and things like that. But I think this is going to continue to be a team that hangs out in the top tier of the Big Ten, and hopefully a trip like what's about to come helps add to the positive outlook on the season.
Gotcha. Well, Scott, I told people how they can find you on Twitter at SBell021. You also have the newsletter. That's where people can find your survey and all your other great content. Tell people about your newsletter, how they can find it, where they can get it.
The newsletter is scottbell.substack.com. You can also just Google Scott Bell newsletter, and first thing that comes up. But, yeah, fully sort of in the preview material stuff. We talked about the survey today. I can bump that back up to the top of my Twitter timeline in case anyone forgot it. And one other super quick plug, especially since you're at sort of a UM alumni club thing right now, is this Saturday. I don't know if there are any remote Dallas listeners, but the Dallas Alumni Club is having their season kickoff lunch, and I will be the speaker for that. So anyone in town, it's in Kelly's pub in Frisco from 12 to 2:30. Tough act to follow. Ira was the guy that came down and did the speech the last time they did this in person, but I will do my best to sort of carry that flag.
You'll do an outstanding job, Scott, as we hear you do every single week in this segment, man. So you'll do great. I'm sure we'll hear from – we do have a lot of Dallas listeners. I'm sure Steve in Dallas is listening right now, as a matter of fact. You expect for him to be there. So, but as always, my friend, we appreciate your time, and we will talk to you again next week.
Looking forward to it. Thanks.
All right. Thanks a lot. That's Scott Bell, the mayor of Michigan Twitter. You can find him at SBell021. Again, at SBell021. We got to get to a break. We're live on location out here at Radrick Farms. Before we do, listen, I tell you all the time, folks, work smarter, not harder, smarter, not harder. That means when it comes to doing those big outdoor jobs like the one I just had to do where we had to clear out a big area next to my property, the common area with all the buckthorn infringing upon my property. We had to clear that area out. You gonna chop all that down and grade all that land by hand? No. Go rent a skid steer from Alta Equipment and make that job a lot smoother, like we did when we had to rip out our driveway. When renting a skid steer again from Alta Equipment. 7 locations to serve you throughout Michigan. Michigan's number one construction equipment company with more products and more brands to serve all of your home and construction needs. So that big project will be a breeze with Michigan's number one selection of compact excavators, skid steers, dingoes, bark blowers, wheel loaders, and more. Nearly 50 brands to choose from Volvo to Takeuchi to Avant to Toro to Gale to Finn, you name it, they've got it. Of course, as I said, don't go get some old machines at a national chain where you get those big prices. Call my friends at Alta at 844-GO-2-ALTA. It's 844-GO-2-ALTA. And let their experts get you what you need the first time. Again, 7 locations to serve you throughout Michigan. Alta is my place to go when I need equipment. Make them yours. And tell them Sam sent you. Got to get to a break. Back on the other side here on the Michigan Insider, live from Radrick Farms, site of the University of Michigan, U of M Club of Greater Detroit's annual golf outing. Back on the other side here on Sports Talk 1050 WTKA, the ticket.
The countdown is on for the 2024 NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, live from Detroit, and you can attend in person for free.
Welcome to the NFL Draft.
See the next NFL stars and experience the ultimate NFL fan festival, featuring live concerts,
interactive games, player autographs, and more. The NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, April 25th through 27th. Visit NFL.com/draftaccess to register for free entry today.